Our interview with Walter Raytham, the creator of the Kings of Comedy, continues in part two. What do you think of the state of stand-up comedy is today versus, you know, at its height?
Terrible. It has no substance. It has no foundation. It has no point of view. It has no meaning. You know, it's just like they're taking it. The people who are doing it, except for people like Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock, Kevin Hart, obviously, it's like people don't really respect the craft, in my opinion, like they did 20 years, 30 years ago. You know, the craft of black comedy especially was, you know, it was a big deal, you know, and that's why it did so well. Most people were introduced to it. They really enjoyed it. And all the people who came off the early wave, they did really well. I mean, Chris Tucker was in Death Comedy Jam. Bill Bellamy, Bill Hughley, Bernie Mac, all those people came through Death Comedy Jam and went on to be, you know, do some pretty big things.
Right, right.
You know, we did, you know, a few of them did Kings with me. So, you know, I don't know.
No, but just the state of stand-up comedy, is it somewhat fading?
I think it is. I think people are becoming social media influencers and then going out and doing stand-up comedy. They don't take the craft, like I said, they don't take the craft serious enough. You know, it's, I think it's bigger than that. But then they'll say to me, well, I have 10 million followers and I sell shows out. Well, that's great, you know, but that doesn't mean the comedy is good. It doesn't mean it's relevant and it's going to be around 20 years from now. Anyone going to be like, hey, let me listen to that guy's, you know, comedy album. It was so good. You know, we would listen to the Richard Pryor albums and Greg Parks albums because they're timeless. You can listen to them now.
I still do.
Yeah, and they're relevant, you know. So to have, you know, some of the comics come out now and don't really have a respect, I think, to the art form of comedy, you know, is troubling to me.
Okay. We talked about upcoming projects and initiatives, and I think you addressed that. That was on my list. What about producers, being a promoter in this day and time? What do you recommend for people that would like to emulate what you've done and just starting out?
Anybody wanting to be a promoter, I'll tell them not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell them why. If you have $100,000 and you put it in a barrel and you put gasoline on it and set it on fire, that's what it's like being a promoter. You don't ever know when you can lose the house or the farm on the show or in the tours. It's just a tough way to make a living. Yeah. So I don't know that I'd be a hypocrite because I did it. I took the risk and I bet the whole farm on it. But I know what that's like. And it doesn't have to be that. Like, it didn't have to be that way. It could have been a lot worse. I mortgaged my house to make my first movie. You know, the movie could have sucked and I would have lost my house possibly. But when you're in your 20s making a bet, it's different than being in your 50s making a bet. So I would just say, really, at the end of the day, bet on yourself. If financially it makes sense to you, where you can actually take the loss if you were to lose, which is more likely than not, then I say try it, you know. And to become a producer and a promoter, I mean, it's not a big jump from one to the other. To be a producer, you just have to produce TV and content and films and all that, and you're a producer, you know. So being a producer and a promoter are kind of different, but they can kind of have similar attributes. Like, promoting with your own money is dangerous. Producing with your own money is dangerous. But the payoff is bigger on a movie or TV show than it is on a tour. Because whatever you make at the end of the tour, that's it. You don't make any more after that. But you make a movie or a concert film, you still get checks 25 years later.
Yeah,
you
know? The residuals are
great.
Yeah.
You know, I can't complain. It afforded me a really good life. So I think being either, I could support being a producer more so because it's just the risk is not there. The risk tolerance, you know, it's not there. So I would say be a producer as opposed to a promoter.
But what, define a producer and define, I know what a promoter is. A promoter is someone that funds whatever event they want to do. They put the money up front. They make sure everybody's paid, even if it's out of pocket, like you said.
Right.
But now, what's the difference between that and a producer again? Define a producer for me.
A producer is basically the same, wears the same hat. You know, he's the person who brings everybody together. You know, so if a movie is going to get made, they have a producer attached to produce it, to go out and get all the pieces, get the director, get the talent, get, you know, the writer who's going to be on the movie. And that's what their job is, to be the ringleader or the ringmaster, I guess. I don't know if you know.
It's like being a project manager or a program manager.
You're over everything.
Yeah.
Every single thing comes back to you. So, and you still have a right to do the promoter angle, which is what I did.
Right.
I couldn't get my movie made by the studio and they put up all the money. I had to put up half the money. So there is the risk, but the reward was great. You know, I didn't know then that it was going to be as great as it was, but the reward was great and it made a lot of sense for me. But I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't recommend to anyone to make that jump from being a promoter to being a producer and still having that same mentality. You have the mentality of, I am a producer now, not a promoter, and I'm going to have studios, networks, streamers, they're going to pay for my content. I'm not going to have to pay for my own content and then try to sell it, which is what my business model was for years, and it worked. But now there's so many competitors in the marketplace, that business model doesn't work anymore. So you got to really work hard to get studios and networks really interested in your ideas and to put their money up to produce something that is in your head to do.
Yeah. What do you think of artificial intelligence, AI? How's that going to impact your space?
It's going to be interesting. You know, I've seen it take place. I watched it on TV, and the power. What I always say to people here recently, I don't think it just happened. It's not like, oh, one day came and bam, we have AI. AI's been listening to our phone calls for years. You know, you talk having a conversation about Walt Weekly, you put in WA, and then it just fills out Walt Weekly.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Where did that come from? You know, so I think anything that's a step forward as far as, you know, them being able to create something that big, it just comes with a lot of responsibility, you know, and I get concerned about how people will use it. You know, if you had kids now at home, are they going to be using that to help write their paper? Will you be able to tell the difference when you read it, if it was from the AI or your kid did it? Like, how would you really know? So I'm glad I'm not a parent. Well, I won't say parent. I'm glad I'm not raising kids at home right now, because I'm really concerned about them and what may happen to their exposure on the internet through this whole AI, and then become dependent on it. You can't go a place to have dinner or lunch without seeing kids at the other table with a pad or a tablet, you know, some kind of something, you know? So these kids are just different. So what they learn now, what they, you know, that their truth is going to be totally different. AI is going to be just another thing in it. You know, like cell phones. They don't know about house phones. Like, what? Is a phone in the house? Like, they don't have any idea. You know, and that's just the telephone. Imagine all the things that change every day with them. So AI is kind of scary to me, but I think growth is necessary. So,
yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, at the end of the day, we're evolving. Now, I look at AI as, you know, just a part of our evolution.
Yeah.
All right. But a lot of people are going to, we did a show last week and it was released yesterday. Part two of an interview we did with Jeffrey Harris, who's a cybersecurity expert.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the show we did, it was about AI. All right. And I can tell you what they call narrow AI is Siri and Alexa. We've been using it all this time.
Oh, that's a.
Yeah. That's AI.
Yep. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like we're a population walking around with our heads in the cloud. It's like, they didn't you get that?
Yeah, it's already there. And I tell you, I don't know what I would do without Siri. All right? Because when you get to say, you know, got so many things in your mind, you know, right. This and that, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got your podcast life versus your regular life, bills do, what bills do.
Right.
I use Siri. And just say, Siri, remind me to do this, remind me to do that. And I got down. I had I'm cleaning up my to dos. I had over 1,000 to dos that I had completed.
No way.
I'm telling you.
Wow. She's an assistant. They said it would make a good assistant, AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I recommend that for people that are, you know, getting up there in age and They got a lot on their plate, and you know, with memory. Short term memory is something. I deal with that myself, you know. I have problems with short term memory.
I'm hearing you. There's a lot of things going on up here.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. Remember the time we played golf, right? And I knew you beat me, so you don't have to tell anybody, right? So I was thinking that, you know, on the tee box, you know how you go to the tee box and yet they put you with another, like twosome. Let's say you're only two, and they put you with another two, right? They pair you up. And you shake hands on the tee box on the first hole, right? And you shake hands, and they guess what? My name is Jerry. My name is Larry. Okay, by the time you put to the green of the first hole, you don't know who they are. You don't know their names.
I don't know. That's me. I'm not good at it.
I'm a bad with names.
It's like I got to write it down in my hand or something to remember. I'm not good at that.
I put it on my scorecard. I mean, on the scorecard, I write the name there.
Write the name down.
Yeah, but the only problem with doing that is that, you know, Larry, you may call Bill or Jerry, and he's not Jerry, he's Larry or vice versa. Right. So that's the only problem that I have. Could you say about the up and coming entrepreneur, because you are an entrepreneur, magnified, okay? What would you tell the young that wants to get into the entertainment business and thinking about where they should, you know, position themselves?
I think there's a lot more opportunities for people of color now in the entertainment business. And I would just say, find out what it is in that industry that you really love, that you're really passionate about. And then it becomes not about working for money. It becomes about working for your project or working for your artistic form. So I would just tell people who want to be entrepreneurs, you know, you're betting on yourself. And I would take, and this is something I told my kids one day. I was like, look, you can go out, get a job, work there for 25 years, retire. They'll give you a watch. They might give you a little bonus. And that's it. For 25 years, on the other side, you can devote to your own company and your own vision, your own what. And at the end of that 25 years, you might have enough to buy a watch and give yourself a bonus. But the difference is your sweat equity was placed in something that's yours as opposed to something that's someone else's. So Michael is 25, my youngest son, Mike is 25. In 25 years, when he kind of about my age, if he can look back over his life and know that a lot of his hard work and perseverance, you know, benefited him and his family in a real way because he was an entrepreneur as opposed to working for someone else, he's won. You know, I have partners in LA who are in their 70s, 60s and 70s, you know, that they don't see it any other way than work for yourself. You know, it's all about being an entrepreneur. So for us producers and writers and directors, you know, we're basically, that's what we are. You know, a writer who is not on a television show on a regular basis is an entrepreneur. You know, they're writing scripts. No one's paying them yet, but they're, you know, writing and they're out doing meetings and trying to make things come together. So, you know, I have another son that's an entrepreneur, in my opinion, with, you know, but he's in the finance industry. So, you know, I always kind of told him that story about the 25 years. You know, I want him to look back at the same thing. He's 9 years older than his brother. So now he's kind of looking back now, like it's hard and it's very challenging, you know. But at the end of the day, I'd rather have that sweat equity poured into my legacy and my business as opposed to, you know, if I went to work right now for Amazon for 20 years, that's my work was for Amazon.
Right.
And it didn't have anything to do with Walter Latham or Latham Entertainment. So my thing is to work hard as an entrepreneur and to try to stay one. Even if you're one now, try to stay an entrepreneur. If you're not, consider it, because all the work that you do is really for someone else, whoever signs your check. If you sign your own check, you're going in the right direction. And is it easy? No. Hey, will it ever get easier? Nope. It'll get harder. Because once you're successful, you got to work harder to stay successful.
You have to maintain. Absolutely.
Our whole, you know, will, but if you want to ride that ride, or do you want to ride the ride with, you know, an employer, you know, as opposed to you being your own boss. And, you know, my boys have shown to this date that they don't want to work for people. So they're not, they have their own businesses. You know, one, I don't really understand. And the other one really does something I don't quite understand, but I think I understand it more than what the first one does. So, okay. That's the way to go, man. The podcast, like, you could be just dedicating these hours to someone else's business, someone else's company, someone else's podcast. But you're not using your own podcast with your name on it. So let's say you make no money off of it for 10 years. You can always look back and say, I did 400 episodes and I helped people. You know, people wrote in and said how much it changed their life. You know, you don't get that, you know, working for another person. And I'm a freak. And then my sons know it too. They're like, but dad, when you were this, like, I'm like, yep. And my life is not a life I want you to emulate because it's very risky. I don't want you to try to do what I do. But the more I said it, the more they're like, you know, I'm not going to make it in your industry. But I'm going to go and be an entrepreneur in the industry that I want to be in. So the bottom line is they're all doing well. They're in the industries that they love, and they're entrepreneurs. They don't work. No one signs their check with themselves, but them. And that's all you really, I mean.
You couldn't ask for more than that.
And that's more than that.
Proud papa. There you go.
Exactly. Big payoff.
There you go. Absolutely. Right. Thank you. I want to just say thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle and I. And, you know, what you have said, I think it's going to be very valuable to people that listen to our podcast. You know, when you get to write that book, Do Not Forget Us.
Oh.
You know, I mean, you're always there.
You're one of our
biggest supporters. I know that.
Yeah.
So I do want to thank you. And this is Roberto Latham, CEO of Latham Entertainment and producer of the original Kings of Comedy. Thank you very much, Walter, for being on the Walt Weekly Podcast. And with that said, I didn't even throw people, please like, subscribe, follow. And do you know what? We're talking about AI, right?
Yeah.
And I mentioned Alexa. So people out there, if you want to listen to the Walt Weekly, you don't want to pick up your phone, or you don't want to go to your laptop, you don't want to do that, just go to, say, Alexa, please play the Walt Weekly Podcast. And boom, you're right there. Laying down, relaxing.
Oh, man. I got to try that out myself.
Yeah, let me hear that.
They're both of them. Alexa and Siri.
Yeah, the first episode that comes up is the latest one. Episode 219. If you need to do it now, let's see, 220, because we released one yesterday.
That's nice. I will do that. I'll do that soon. I hang up.
All right.
Let's see how that works.
We're blockbuster. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, to lay some people, the creator of the Kings of Comedy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.